Hello again, everybody. Bernie Miklas back with round two in the video production here on this Wednesday in St. Louis. Cold outside. I guess you've heard. I guess you felt it. Earlier today, did a video here on my Bernie Miklas show talking about Mizzou basketball. And, you know, the Tigers getting off to a really good start. And, you know, there's some positivity in the air. There's at least hope. It looks like they've made a lot of progress in terms of rebounding from a terrible season last year. But anyway, I want to talk about another team that's hoping to rebound, and we're not sure when they're going to rebound. We're talking about the St. Louis Cardinals. The winter warm-up is this weekend. And listen, the fans that go will have a good time. And the fans that go, I would say, I don't think anybody should criticize them for going. I mean, I know that there's so many people mad at the Cardinals, fed up with the Cardinals, whatever. But it's just like the people that call Cardinals fans who still go to games, buy a lot of tickets and merch. They call them sheep or whatever. I'm not into shaming fans who want to support their team as far as it's their money, it's their time. If they want to go to the winter warm-up, have a great time. If they're excited about it, have a great time. If they want to go to the ballpark 15 nights a year, 15 days or nights a year, enjoy it. Enjoy it. So I've never understood this thing where, you know, people feel like they should dictate to others about what others should do with their time and their money. It's just ridiculous. So I sincerely hope the Cardinals fans that go down there this weekend will have a swell time. And I just wish the Cardinals maybe gave them more reasons to go down there happy and really looking forward to the baseball season, right? It's kind of hard to do. We've talked about this before. This has been a really, really odd offseason. It's been strange. You know, the Cardinals announced a reset right after the 2024 season, and I'm still not sure what exactly they're resetting. Listen, I know it's the youth movement. We're going to let the young guys play and on and on and on and on in 2025. And the most important work is going to be down below when they rebuild their minor league system and player development system. And they're bringing in some really smart people to coordinate all that. So that's progress. That's hope. I like it. I'm positive about that. But as far as a product on the field in 2025, I mean, it's hard to, you know, rev up some excitement. I still get notes from people. And again, I'm not criticizing them, but when we do the Gas House Gang on KMOX, for example, you know, people talk about, you know, can the Cardinals win the division? Can the Cardinals do this? Can the Cardinals do that? Only like all positive things. And I don't want to rain on somebody else's optimism, but the point is, it's like based on what they've done this offseason so far, and I don't think they're going to do much this offseason. They might sign a couple, three nominal free agents for depth, but they're not going to spend any money in a major way. So, you know, since the end of last season, what they've been doing is subtracting players and payroll. You know, Goldschmidt is gone, Lance Lynn is gone, Kyle Gibson is gone, Andrew Kittredge is gone. They have they're trying to trade Nolan Arenado, more on that in a moment or two. But they've not spent any money. They're one of six teams in baseball not spent literally a dime in free agents, major league free agent expenditures. And they haven't added to the roster in trades. You know, like sometimes you make a trade, you get a young player back in return, somebody that projects to be in your lineup or your rotation for 2025. That hasn't happened. No free agent signed, no money spent, no trades made that bring someone in that can help you. No deals whatsoever to help you win more games than you did last year, which was 83. And the subtractions, most of all, not that this is breaking news, but the subtractions, most of all, basically mean that there's a much lower payroll, and that is a big part of the offseason agenda. I mean, it's pretty obvious, and you say it, I say it. I think the Cardinals sort of hide behind the minor league player development renovation bringing in all the new people to fix the player development system and get the Cardinals young prospects on more preparation, fully prepared, more capable of having success and avoiding, you know, slips and slides and slumps that, you know, take them off track in their career when they're young in their career at the major league level. I think the Cardinals hide behind that. You say that, I'm not telling you that it's something you don't know, because if you just look at how much money that are off the books. Now, listen, there are about four or five places you can go for payroll information. And a lot of times I just go to the place where the easiest information is to be found and where I can just get a quick look at it. And, you know, a lot of times it's COTS contracts, sometimes it's SpotRac. And SpotRac in this case, gave me a better look and a quicker look at where things stand payroll wise, like today, January 15th, compared to the end of last season. So this is going on we're using the luxury tax payroll because this is the one consistent thing I could find that made sense. Last season, the Cardinals spent over $200 million in the 40-man payroll, the competitive balance luxury tax. They were about just under $208 million. But where they are right now is about $147 million. And that's a pretty big drop. You know, you don't need me to tell you that. If I did my math right, and I'm already questioning that, being silly as always. Hold on a minute. You get to see me work my handy calculator. I just want to make sure I'm sure about this. I wrote something down and I'm like, is that right? Okay, I'll check. All right. Just under $208 million last year in the 40-man. Right now where they sit on the 40-man is about $146.8 million. According to my calculations, that's $61 million lower than where they ended last year. Now, they will probably add some salary. And, of course, they could also subtract a lot of Nolan Arenado's contract if they can trade him. And how much, we don't know. But that will drop again as far as the commitments for 2025. They are estimating the Cardinals to finish up at about $160 million on the 40-man competitive balance tax payroll. Now, if you have other information from other salary tracking sites, if the Cardinals themselves would hear me somehow and they say, well, that's not right. Okay, well, tell me what's right then. Again, I'm just doing the best I can here. And SpotRac's been around a long time tracking stuff for a long, long time. So anyway, the 40-man payroll way down from where it was last year, and more cuts could be happening. If they can't trade Arenado, then they have to trade Fetty. They have to do this, they have to do that. They dump Mats, maybe they reconsider keeping Ryan Helsley. But again, it's almost as if John Mozeliak, you know, they talk about a reset and it makes you think like, okay, good. They're really going to churn the roster. They're really going to, you know, make room, make sure that they make room for a lot of their young pitchers who are getting close. And they really haven't done that. I mean, they're kind of, it's almost like John Mozeliak in his final year of doing this, just can't stomach the idea of like sort of starting an actual rebuild. And I'm not talking about a teardown job, but a more aggressive rebuild where you do sell off assets with the idea of taking a hit in 2025, but making yourself better in the future. I'm talking about trading a Ryan Helsley before you lose him as a free agent, trading an Eric Fetty before you lose him as a free agent. So the Cardinals aren't doing that. And they still flirt with this idea that, and I'm sure you're going to hear this weekend at winter warmup, you know, this idea that, oh, well, you know, we can exceed expectations. You know, I think we really can. And, you know, dropping hints that they think they can contend. You know, if they're proven right about this, I'd be very happy to come back and sing their praises at the end of next season. But I don't have any basis for sharing that optimism right now. And the other thing they're doing in terms of just the whole payroll and controlling or cutting costs, you know, that can be even evidenced in the way this arbitration stuff has gone down. Now, listen, this is nothing new. The Cardinals have a history of being rather stern when it comes to submitting an arbitration number. The player's agent submits their number. There's a difference in between. Sometimes they meet in the middle. Sometimes they negotiate a two-year deal. Or sometimes they go to the actual arbitration hearing and, metaphorically speaking, slug it out, with the Cardinals in effect ripping the player that's sitting right there. It didn't, that kind of stuff didn't go well with Jack Flaherty. It broke Tyler O'Neill. He couldn't handle it after that 2021 season. He had to go to war with the Cardinals in arbitration. He lost, and that dude was just in a daze for the first couple, 3 months of the season, right? I don't know. So it's not fun to go to, I don't think it'd be fun to go to battle with arbitration with your players. And, you know, you have to sit there. If you go to the actual hearing, if you don't settle, and a lot of times they do, you know, where in this year's cases, you know, Lars Nootbaar, Brendan Donovan, and Andre Pallante, you know, you in the individual hearings in front of the arbitrator, you know, you're going to sit there and tell these guys how awful they are and why they don't deserve to make the money they're asking for. The difference with Nootbaar is $500,000. The difference with Donovan is $450,000. And the difference with Andre Pallante is $150,000. I mean, Andre Pallante, first of all, fits into this template of like, well, we're going to, you know, we really believe in our young talent. And not that he's a 21 or 22-year-old kid, but it's a relatively inexperienced major leaguer, but he's getting experience. And last year, he moved into the rotation towards the end of May, and he had the best starting pitching ERA from that point to the end of the year. And so there's a chance they would take him to arbitration and beat him up. I find it hard to believe it's actually going to get to that point, but this is a strange offseason. And boy, do they seem determined to cut costs anywhere they can. And so when you hear about, well, we're excited about our young talent. We're really excited about our young talent. We really like what we have. We think they're going to be very entertaining, and we really like them. So you're going to take them to arbitration if it comes to that? All three of these guys, you're going to take them in there and basically take a baseball bat to them and beat them up? You like them so much over a paltry amount of money, right? Let me do this again since the calculator. See, I don't have graphics, but I have a calculator. 500, let me see, 500 plus 450 plus 150. That's $1.1 million. I mean, whatever. So anyway. Let's recap. No money spent, no free agent signed, no trades made that's going to bring, they're going to bring talent back that can help you win in 2025. No deals made to help you win, no deals whatsoever. The youth movement thing, well, so far what we've seen, it's like, well, you know, we're going to take you to arbitration. You know, we're not going to pay you what you want. Okay. So what else are the fans going to get excited about? I'm serious. Like, what is there to be? The people that are not going to go to the winter warm-up, and by the way, I respect your opinion too. You know, what is it that you're going to get, where you're going to get fans fired up? I mean, they're going to be fired up about Chaim Bloom and the restructuring, the reorganization, the much belated and overdue rehabilitation of the minor league and player development system, which was just in a deplorable shape. Understaffed, underfunded, everything else. Okay, that gets me fired up, but I'm not everybody, right? A lot of people, they're like, well, let me know when that's ready to crank out some good players, and that's fair, but you have to start the process before you can get the results of the process. You actually have to begin the process. So what else is there to get excited? Well, I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to tell you something here that actually is positive, okay? But it doesn't necessarily, it probably won't impact 2025, although it could, and I'll explain. So just hear me out. You know, the Cardinals have been kind of spinning their wheels in terms of, pardon me, developing players. They've had some successes, but some of those successes that we thought were successes, we're not sure if they're going to be successes. I'm talking about Jordan Walker. I'm talking about Nolan Gorman. We're talking about, even though he was a Tampa Bay product, we're talking about Matthew Liberatore, who did come here and pitch in the minor leagues for the Cardinals. You know, we're talking about a number of guys. Which way are they going to go? So, you know, I'm a subscriber to Baseball America. I'm a subscriber to Baseball Prospectus. I subscribe to just about every dang thing, right? So Baseball Prospectus, which, by the way, Chaim Bloom once worked for. Seriously, if you hadn't heard that. I went back and looked at some of his stuff. Man, you think I go thick with the numbers? I went way back and found his stuff in the archive, and there wasn't a lot of it, but because I think the archives probably went back just only so many years. But he did. You talk about deep dives. Wow. So if I'm going to look at some prospect stuff, I'm going to go to Chaim Bloom's fellow employer. Or I'm going to go back to his employer, which is Baseball Prospectus. All right, let me shut up, right? So, and their top 101, see, they want to be different because everyone else has a top 100 prospect. They want top 101. J.J. Weatherholt, who was the 7th overall pick in the draft in 2024, he's 13th overall. That's pretty good. That's real good. Considering he just played some A-ball last year, but he impressed all the scouts, impressed everybody else. He is a rising star in the prospect world. So they had J.J. Weatherholt, number 13 overall prospect. They had Quinn Matthews, number 27, the left-handed pitcher, number 27 on the prospect list. Tink Hentz, the right-handed pitcher, 38th. And then Jimmy Crooks, the catcher, number 88. So the Cardinals had four top 100 prospects. But the thing that's interesting about this, and I only looked at the division, because I think the division, you start close to home and then go from there. The interesting thing about it is that the Cardinals have four top 100 prospects, 101 prospects, excuse me, Baseball Prospectus. So the Cardinals have four, the Brewers have four, the Cubs have four, the Pirates have three, and the Reds have two. So the Cardinals are tied with their Midwest rivals, Milwaukee and Chicago, having the most players on that top 101 prospect list. The Cardinals have been kind of behind all those clubs for a while. Now they've, at this snapshot in time, they've got more top 100 prospects than the Reds or the Pirates, and the same as the Brewers and the Cubs. But I think it goes a little deeper than that, and let me explain. This is easy stuff. The Cardinals have three of the top 38 prospects on that list of 101. Now, there'll be other years where you'd say, so what? Because I've said that. Well, so what? But in context of how other teams are doing in the National League Central, it's a little bigger than so what. For example, the Cardinals have the highest rated prospect in the division. That's J.J. Weatherholt. The Cardinals have the highest rated position player prospect in the division. That would be J.J. Weatherholt. They have the highest rated left-handed pitching prospect in the division. That would be Quinn Matthews. And they have the third highest right-handed pitching prospect in the division. That would be Tink Hentz. So if you look at it this way too, all right, I said Cardinals have three of the top 38 prospects, right? Let's look at the rest of the division. Milwaukee's got one, Chicago's got one, Cincinnati's got one, and Pittsburgh's got one. So the Cardinals have more higher level prospects than the other teams in the division. Whether, listen, prospect stuff, you know how that is. I like to look at it. But I also know that things don't often turn out as expected. And that goes both ways, by the way. Sometimes the prospects in any given year, you see these lists, and then you go back and say, well, how did they do? Some of these guys turned out not nearly as good as the prospect rankings would have us believe they would, or sometimes guys who weren't rated very high turn out to be much better. But it's just a snapshot at one point in time. That's all it is. And in that measure, the Cardinals are looking better. They're looking pretty good. In fact, I was looking at some of these guys. Actually, the Cardinals, in terms of the Cardinals, actually have like two of the top 27 prospects and three of the top 38. But anyway, let me get back to what I was going to say. There's some individual breakdowns, and I'm going to pivot off of one of these. So J.J. Weatherholt, who was listed as a shortstop, although there's a lot of opinions that, of course, he's going to have to move when he gets to the big league. He's going to have to prepare to move because the Cardinals have a 22, soon-to-be 23-year-old shortstop that they like a lot. His name is Mason Winn. They don't need a shortstop. So for whatever it's worth, because they categorize him as a shortstop, Baseball Prospectus has J.J. Weatherholt as the fourth best shortstop prospect in the minors right now. I like this. They have Quinn Matthews as the number one left-handed pitching prospect in the minors. And they have Tink Hentz as the sixth best right-handed pitching prospect in the minor leagues. Jimmy Crooks is interesting because I had no idea that we're seeing some kind of new golden era coming up for catchers in the major leagues, apparently. Because Jimmy Crooks, who's the number 88 prospect overall, I think if you're on the top 101 list, you're a good prospect. But he's 13th among catchers. That's how many highly rated prospects there are at the catcher position. Well, the Cardinals have two fairly young catchers on the big club right now in Ivan Herrera and Pedro Pages. So what's my pivot point? I maintain that Cardinals fans will be getting, I don't know when, and if I'm wrong, I'll be the first person to cut a video and say, me and a lot of other people, but no, it's me. I was wrong about J.J. Weatherholt. Okay. Because you never know. But I think they're in time. I don't know when. I don't know when they'll bring him to the majors. And that's what I want to talk about here. And just give me another minute. But J.J. Weatherholt, and I've said this before, he's not just an exciting offensive talent. He has got a persona about him. He is extremely confident. He knows that he's talented. He's one of those guys that goes to the plate. He's like, yeah, he doesn't care who the pitcher is. I'm going to beat you. He believes in himself, not in a way that is cocky or something that would undermine him where he gets complacent. No, man, he's hungry to hit. He's hungry to eat. You know, he's hungry to do damage. He's hungry to get better. He's hungry to work on everything. And he's got the kind of persona. The Cardinals, let's face it, they don't have a lot of exciting talent, right? This kid's got the persona, the demeanor, where he projects energy and confidence and cockiness, the good kind of cockiness, right? I've said this before, and people laugh at me because they don't understand the context. Weatherholt can be a Bryce Harper-type personality on this team. Not saying he's going to have Harper's career. I'm talking about the personality where, you know, from the time he stepped in the major league batter's box for the first time until now, Bryce Harper, he's like, he steps in and you're like, oh, look at this guy strutting in. Ah, he kind of likes himself, don't he? And he's a guy that just kind of demands your attention. You know, he's just got that electricity about him. And I really believe J.J. Weatherholt will be that kind of guy. Not predicting, like, how his career will end. The Cardinals don't have that kind of persona on their ball club. They don't have that Mr. Personality. Hey, I'm taking all of you on. You know, when he goes out to the diamond in the major leagues. Afraid of nothing. Afraid of nobody, right? The Cardinals' young guys are all kind of – Brendan Donovan's pretty confident, but we all know, man. The Cardinals' young hitters, and I'm talking about their young hitters, they're more kind of like, you know, as soon as something goes bad, it's like they're defeated. Your head down, right? That ain't going to be Weatherholt. Not going to be Weatherholt. Here's the problem. We've spent so much of this offseason talking about how, well, if they don't trade Arenado, and this is the biggest screw-up of the offseason. They haven't moved him. We're less than a month from spring training opening, and they haven't moved him. We'll see if they can move him. But first of all, they're going to have to be willing to eat more money. And here we go again, because they're trying to save money. But even if you eat more of his contract than you want to, you're still going to save money. It's better to just get him off the books and to get him along his way. Because the reason is, I'm holding you to your, well, this is all about rebuilding. Well, oh, that's right. We can't call that rebuilding. It's all about resetting with all of these young players. We really like these young position players. We really like what we have. That we think they're exciting and entertaining. Okay. We've spent so much time talking about how they want to free up third base to put Nolan Gorman there at his natural position. And I'm curious to see how Nolan Gorman will play well there. His defensive reviews in the minors were fine. How well he'll play there, he'll probably be more comfortable there than he is at second base. But if they can't get rid of Arenado, Gorman's going to have to stay at third unless the Cardinals actually have the guts to say to Arenado, well, it's okay, well, you're staying, but we're probably going to start you about 100 times, just telling you up in front. That ain't going to go over too well, and then you're going to have this big controversy. So we've been talking about, well, geez, if they don't move Arenado, you know, the fallout includes several things. Gorman's going to have to go back to second base. Thomas Sejace might not make the club coming out of spring training. He so certainly would not get as much playing time because, you know, when you have Arenado and you're talking about 550, 600 or more plate appearances at third base, that takes up a lot of plate appearances that you could be sprinkling around. You could be spreading around. So the fallout would be Gorman back to second. Oh, well, but, you know, Brendan Donovan's probably going to play a lot more left field, move around a little more. If you play him in left field, then what does that mean? Unless you're willing to play Lars Nootbaar in center because they're committed to playing Walker in right. And they're obsessed with Michael Ciani's outfield defense. And they're, to me, it's obvious they're not going to give Victor Scott a full chance to make the club coming out of spring training. So you might have to move some things around that you didn't want to do in the outfield. And then the other fallout, of course, if you keep Arenado, with their absolute obsession with trimming costs, they're going to have to find cuts elsewhere, which could be Eric Fetty, $7.5 million starting pitcher. That's what he's due next year. It could be Ryan Helsley. If they decide, well, we have no choice. They're going to have to find someone to take Steven Matz, even if they have to eat half the money, because the bottom line, it's still saving money. If you're paying, even if you're paying $6.5 million or $6 million of the 12.5, you're still, it's a net savings. And you also open up a spot in your rotation for Quinn Matthews or Michael McGreevy or Tink Hentz coming down the road, or maybe a couple of other people. You never know when there's a surprise, someone's zooming through the minor leagues. And I know what some of you are saying, and it's not that I disagree with you, but let me remind you, saying, well, they need to trade Michaelis and get rid of that salary. Well, yeah, but he has a no trade, and yeah, other teams see Miles Michaelis' stuff too, right? So, you know, in the last 2 years, he's got the third worst starting pitching ERA in the majors, and he's got one of the two or three lowest strikeout rates and two or three lowest swing and miss rates, and a lot of balls in play. He doesn't miss bats. So, see, those teams see that, and they know, well, he'll give you 200 innings, but and that there's value in innings, but if a lot of it turns, a lot of those innings are basically batting practice, who wants to take on that contract? In other words, I'm just saying we got to be realistic about this. I mean, most of you know that. So here's the extension of the Arenado problem. We talked, I'm not going to review it again. All right, if he is the third baseman and they can't move him and they can't move him at the deadline and he's back, let's say, in 2026, and you go through this whole thing all over again, if, I'm not saying it will happen. You know, Weatherholt's going to be on a fast track to the majors. The Cardinals already have a shortstop, okay? So then it comes down to, I have seen like Baseball America say they believe Weatherholt eventually will wind up at third base for the Cardinals. I've seen some other prospect trackers who I respect saying, well, no, his position will be second base. Well, if Arenado is here in 2025 and if he's here in 2026, again, if he is, and then his contract goes through 2027, it doesn't mean that, that not only means Gorman's blocked from playing third base, where are you going to put Weatherholt? If Gorman's at second base and Arenado's at third base, when's your shortstop? Where's Weatherholt going to go? So there's a chance that he's blocked too, which means they may have to trade someone they don't necessarily want to trade, right? And I know a lot of you would trade Gorman right now, and you would trade him, you know, for a can of pork and beans. Little too soon for that, my friends, because I think a lot of y'all saying that, I got to tease you now. A lot of y'all saying, well, I trade him now. Okay. And you know what? He goes somewhere else and hits 38 bombs. I said they were crazy to trade him. You know, we love to take a mallet to the Cardinals and beat them on the head when they trade someone and they do better elsewhere. Oh, my goodness. Get out the cudgel. Get out the mallet. Get out the hammer. Get out the tongs. Time to beat on John Mozeliak some more, right? So you have to pardon me. I'm sorry. I love you. But you're going to have to pardon me if I don't take your – I'd trade Gorman now, damn it. If I don't quite take that seriously. Well, I don't take it seriously for another reason. It's because I want to see more of what he can do under a new hitting coach next season. There's a lot of ability there. But think about the scenario. You got J.J. Weatherholt coming up, and he's blocked. Suppose he's tearing up everything in the first half of the season and he's jumping levels. I think the Cardinals are so damn cautious, they'd probably not put him in the major leagues in 2025. But if this Arenado thing drags on past 2025, okay, I repeat, what are you going to do? I'm just saying there's no easy solution, even though some of you say, well, you trade Gorman. That's an easy solution to you, but at this point in time, it's a short-sighted decision. It's hard to find that kind of power. So anyway, can you imagine there's at least a chance this Arenado thing can drag out long enough to where it kind of puts an obstacle in the path of J.J. Weatherholt, who right now is the 13th best prospect in Major League Baseball? I don't know. John Mozeliak. Woo. Got this reset. What has been reset other than subtracting people to save money? What exactly has been reset at the major league level? I know they're resetting in the minors. That's a legitimate thing. This will be John Mozeliak's final winter warm-up. Wow. I think the fans will be polite. They'll ask him some questions because he's going to take questions. Think the DeWitts will be taking chance with questions. My experience is that fans are actually, they'll ask some good, tough questions with respect. But, you know, it's always easy for people to be social media tough guys and warriors and, you know, well, I'm going to tell the truth about these people, you know, but then these are also the same kind of people that when they're actually face to face with someone like Mozeliak or Bill DeWitt, they may ask a pointed question, but it'll be done politely. So the winter warm-up, I wish the Cardinals had given their fans, are going to be excited to be there, but I wish the Cardinals had give the rest of us something else to get really fired up about other than the way overdue project to fix their decrepit player development system. All right. I'll sign off now. I went too long. What can I say? I had a lot to unpack there. Thank you.